to any, I was going to ask you about Italian soldiers, but I guess by that time they were either fighting with you and there was a very small handful.
Yeah, we just had one company eventually that was with us for a while. And
excellent.
5 o'clock, we're all right. Another half hour.
Okay. You talked a bit about the Gustav line.
That was the first, yeah.
Okay, and that was in when?
That would be in 44. We got into Rome in June.
And Gustav was before that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I thought it was the very beginning of the second attempt to bypass Monte Cassino.
Mm-hmm.
And April, maybe? March, April, somewhere around there.
Now, do you have any connection with the Monte Cassino affair?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. Gustav line was there. The Hitler line was there. And Monte Cassino was on the flank.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first obstacle was the Gustav line, and then the Hitler line. Mm-hmm. And but overlooking the whole thing was Mr. Monte Cassino.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I had a company in support of the Poles who stormed the casino. That was the time of this first action.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some crap in the paper the other day, or on the radio, I think, was saying that, you know, what a crime it was to have destroyed the monastery and so on because the Germans weren't there. An absolute cock. They were there, and they stayed there under terrific odds and put up one hell of a scrap, and a hell of a lot of people died trying to get them out of there.
And a lot of them died beforehand when the Allies said, we're not going to destroy it, and we'll try and bypass it or take it without...
Yeah, boy, it was just crap. They were...
But who was saying this? Was it a soldier, or was it a historian, or...?
It was, I heard it on the radio, I think, the other day. I meant to do something about it, too, but I didn't. It was some, I don't know who it was, it was some news item that...
Yeah. Was it a younger chap who was spewing it out, or was it an older man? Or?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Somebody we should know better.
Yes.
But I don't know who. I meant to do something about it. I'm very guilty of not doing anything about it. But there was no doubt about it. They were there.
Mm-hmm.
I meant...
What's it commonly?
We unleashed... I think it was... 1,100 buddy... artillery pieces of various descriptions that were pooping away at them. The Air Force was going in time and time and time again at them, and the infantry were trying to scrabble up the bloody hill at them, and the minute the firing stopped, up they came again, and they resisted for a long time, and very expensively for us.
Yeah. Well, what would your field company be doing in support of the Poles, for example?
At that time, I guess, they'd be lifting mines and helping them get their... vehicles and so on over the obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
I recollect. It was we had quite a long, windy road leading up to the sort of jumping off place, which we developed and helped maintain and so on. And, but mostly it'd be lifting mines and helping them reach obstacles.
Now, would this be when the rains were there? It was muddy? Because what I'm leading up to is a question on, is it more difficult when it's muddy to find mines, or is it best when it's dry? Or is there any opportune time for finding mines?
Don't think it makes any difference, no. What we used to do once was just a bloody hatpin and go to the ground until we hit one and dig it up.
Yeah. Isn't that slightly dangerous, though?
you got to be careful. But you know, you can imagine, you know, a minesweeper... all very well when you're miles away from the enemy, but much more effective when you're really going trying to
well,
it's like to get hit doing it that way, and they're not very easy to work a minesweeper.
Well, you know, in all the films they show out of Hollywood, you always have the knife sort of at an angle and you're poking slowly like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that another method, or is it slower than...
Well, all we ever did was just go down there, but gently, you know, not to not too hard.
No. Did you lose many men doing that kind of stuff?
No.
it was safer than we're led to believe.
Well, they developed pretty skillful. They were quite skillful at it.
Mm-hmm. Would there be a vast number of different kinds of German mines?
Yeah, the main ones we had was these bloody shoe mines, which you couldn't do much about. They were wooden, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the Canadian troops lost a hell of a lot of feet as a result of them. But the teller mines, which were the bigger ones, were metal,
mm-hmm.
and so they were.
Would these be the anti-personnel mines that would blow up?
They were the ones that could
shoot up and explode about waist level or something?
Oh, yeah, that was another kind. Yeah, sure, the shrapnel mine, yeah.
Yeah.
The tripwire and so on, that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, there were, yes, I guess I said, the two main ones were the shoe mine, the wooden box mine,
mm-hmm.
and the teller mine, but there were some other anti-personnel mines too, yeah.
This shoe mine, how would it be constructed? Would it be a little box in the
Just
ground?
Just a little wooden box, yeah, with an explosive charge in it, and you could set off with either by stepping on it or a little tripwire or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very difficult to detect.
Yeah.
And the poor bloody infantry, I'm afraid, didn't have any. But they just went through, and if there were shoe mines there, they lost their feet, and that was it.
So they weren't really meant to kill their...
Mind you, they could put a Bangalore torpedo through and maybe...
If they could find out
if they knew
field.
They were there, yeah.
Yeah. But I guess they were there simply to incapacitate, not to kill. I mean, it's just as good to get rid of a soldier out of the field as it is to kill him, right?
I saw so many feet sky around various times in the infantry. It was just distressing as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in many cases, they just didn't want to give the show away by putting a Bangalore torpedo in when they got in. You know, they just said, go.
It would also slow you up if you started doing Bangalore torpedoes every time you ran into a minefield.
That's right.
And when you have people like Simmons, it's push ahead and go, go.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about booby-trapped houses and buildings?
Yeah, there was lots of that. Lots of that.
And was that an art in itself, or did it differ so much that you had to just...
Yeah, some people, you know, developed a technique for... go with a sort of a wire, you know, and feel your way gently around, and...
Mm-hmm.
I personally... other than training, never did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably not a good describer, but some of the sappers were pretty good at it.
Another thing you mentioned was that you did a lot of work reconstructing waterworks and electrical things. I think that was reconstructing the Italian.
Yeah.
Now, how had their work been in the first place? Because I've kind of got the impression that Italian public works wouldn't be as
they were
technically advanced.
They're good engineers. They're excellent engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, they were good.
Had the Germans sabotaged most of them
mm-hmm.
on the retreat?
Yeah. Or they get badly damaged in the shell fire and so on, of our own shell fire.
Mm-hmm.
But, electric light plants and water supply facilities, they get badly damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately we had kind of guys that could step in and get them operating again without too much trouble.
The kind of thing that we neglect is that after you've got them going, after the war's over, they go back into civilian hands and they've got their utilities going again. Which is not something we realize too often.
That's right.
Yes.
But almost every little town by the time we got to it was just a mass of rubble, and we had to just dig our way right through them, and sometimes often just bypass them entirely. And I remember one time, having been a fruit farmer, coming from the fruit farm, I was a little distressed at what we did, but there was this little ride through a village and down again, and I looked at it and I thought, oh no, I went through that fruit orchard there. Oh, well, we just built a new road through the fruit orchard, and the hell was going through it, and we did, in a lot less time. But I often felt a little guilty about destroying that poor guy's fruit orchard instead of staying with the road that was there before. But you had to make up your mind in a hurry and do things like that.
Well, it's the military imperative, isn't it?
Yeah. And the obvious, quick thing to do is to destroy the bloody fruit orchard.
Well, you could justify it in any number of ways by saying, well, the Italian is probably dead anyway, so... But anyway, how much you can do now, I guess. Do you have any specific memories of the Gothic and the Hitler lines?
my main member of the Gothic, I was lucky enough, I guess, to just be on our brow of the hill, and somebody, I guess, some gunner had left a great big set of mounted binoculars on a stand of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And at that particular time, I really didn't have anything I had to do, and I spent, oh gosh, I guess half an hour or more watching the whole thing from a grandstand seat, watching the infantry and the tanks and the medical ambulances rushing back and forth, and I could see the whole thing just like in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic.
Well, how far away would you have been?
Well, it was the Gothic was a pretty wide river bank. You know, the whole thing came down like that to the river itself, which may not have been so wide, but I was on this side, and most of the Germans were on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And they were busy with the people down in the middle, not me. You know, they weren't worried about me. And I was just standing right up there in full, just with the perfect ringside seat of the whole thing. It was just incredible.
Could you hear it all going on?
Oh, yeah. See and hear, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that was the time that Chris Wilkes' brother got killed, I remember. But you know, you could see our infantry wiggling through. You could see the tanks going up and the spitting back from the Germans had all these built-in reinforced concrete gun emplacements. They were all very heavily reinforced and sighted, you know, so they had every advantage in the world. Our guys were just sitting turkey. But the thing that I guess impressed me most was these Army Medical Corps ambulance jeeps, they fluffing with their Red Cross, but no one paid any attention to the bloody Red Cross. And they were whipping in and whipping back and bringing back the wounded, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I never just so impressed with their devotion to duty.
It kind of makes you think about Pierre Trudeau, and if he was really a conscientious objector, why didn't he
That's
become
right.
an ambulance driver?
That's right.
A number of people in the First War did.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I doubt whether many people would ever have an opportunity to tell what I saw that day from such a grandstand seat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, how did it affect you? Was it a sobering experience, or was it or did you just rethink in those terms at that time?
I guess I just think, I'm goddamn lucky I was. I wasn't. it was quite frightening, yeah, to realize that our poor guys were going up against such formidable odds, you know, but pressing on. Just pressing on.
Well, that's one thing about the Italian campaign that's always struck me, is that we didn't use the sea to our advantage. I mean, I know we didn't have the equipment to do the little inch-on landings around behind the Germans, but that would have been the obvious thing
to
do.
Well, they tried it at
Anzio, I guess.
Anzio, yeah.
But they didn't handle that particularly well.
No, it was that Gothic line was a very heavily fortified, and I don't know what kind of distances would be involved, but there's no question about it. The bank sort of came down like that to the river, and they had the whole of that their bank heavily reinforced, and I'm sure much behind too, like the heavy gun sprouts and so on, it would be sighted behind the flopping over it as directed by their forward observation posts.
I guess the trouble is that because of the geographical features of the land, you really can't get air support all that particularly accurate because of the hills.
No, I don't remember any air support there at all, but
even with those concrete machine gun emplacements, you needed a direct hit, and that was darned unlikely. So it really took a man and a grenade to get one of those things out.
Yeah, that's right.
So
it was just incredible odds that our guys had to overcome there. And obviously, a lot of people displayed a lot of guts.
Yeah.
But the ones that impressed me most, I guess, at that particular stage were medical corps, because they had no protection at all. Just imagine those jeeps with flying around with their Red Crosses, sitting targets, and the guys were shooting at them just as hard as they were shooting at anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans were.
Was there a German equivalent of the Red Cross?
Well, I don't seem to recollect anybody collecting on their behalf, but Maybe I wouldn't see that so easily. Yeah. It's all ours.
The particular battle you saw, was there...
Well, no, their guys are all undercover anyway. I wouldn't, you know...
That's right, too.
Yeah.
Well, that particular battle, was there a breakthrough or was it repulsed?
No, we got through.
And the Hitler line that was behind was not quite as extensive as the Gothic, was it?
No, but it was very... It wasn't...
The Gustav, I guess we're talking about.
The Gustav... The Hitler line was pretty formidable. Very formidable. But it wasn't just as... easy for them to defend, shall we say, as the Gothic line.
Because of the
geography. They had a lot longer, I guess, to prepare. No, maybe not, I don't know. Maybe a similar length of time. But they had reinforced concrete gun emplacements in the Hitler line, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty formidable. And it was a dirty battle. Oh, it was an awful dirty battle.
Does it bother you as a veteran of that campaign to not be fully recognized as having done as something important as Western Europe?
No, I don't... No, I think...
But it doesn't seem to get the publicity or the press and the writing.
No. I guess we were pretty satisfied we were doing a good job. we kept going forward all the time, and we were winning. We were certainly keeping back a hell of a lot of German divisions that might otherwise have been employed on the Western Front.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we... we probably wouldn't be aware whether it was recognized in Canada or anywhere. What we were doing was important.
Well, even today that's kind of the case, isn't it?
Hmm?
Is it even today that's kind of the case?
That
the Italian campaign isn't given the weight that other campaigns seem to be. It's sort of like Burma, you know. I mean, at least after D-Day in Europe, when the Italian campaign was continuing, I mean, the fighting was still going on just as strong.
I certainly didn't.
Think
about that. Then, and reading the history now, I don't get the impression we didn't do something that wasn't rather important.
Well, did it bother you when the Americans were allowed to enter Rome?
No, and then I don't really thought about that at all. I was in there myself on the 6th, and some of them might get there a few hours before, but not a hell of a lot. I just, this time I was just swanning. No, I don't think we thought about it.
Well, from what I've read, Mark Clark and led his Americans into Rome, and the British and Kay had been told to hold back and let them take care of it.
We probably weren't aware that this was going on.
Yeah. In retrospect, does it bother you, or does it matter?
No. Endeavor to achieve the same objective.
Yes, sir. Well, let me ask you this now. Who would you be under in terms of command structure?
I got almost all my instructions from the Chief Engineer 1 Corps.
Mm-hmm. And was he the ranking engineering officer?
He was a brigadier, yeah.
Okay. And he would be at Corps headquarters, and where would you be most of the time? Would you be amongst the units?
Yeah, I tried to keep my headquarters as far forward at all times because, as I was saying, we had all the bridging equipment there fairly close by,
mm-hmm.
and the mechanical equipment company and the field park were all usually in a sort of a headquarter area,
mm-hmm.
and so we were always usually well ahead of Corps headquarters. In many cases, I'm sure I had a divisional headquarters. But fairly close up. So as close as we could get. We kept going in bounds, you know, and if we got a breakthrough, we'd try and get up ahead as near as possible without really being in danger of losing all our equipment through a mishap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The main thing was to get it ahead of the guns, ahead of the... any heavy traffic on the road so that there wouldn't be any delay in getting more bridging equipment up in particular.
Well, if the task needed to be done, would you be the one that would authorize it or would have to be authorized back at Corps?
Well, usually what they would say at Corps was that we want you to develop and maintain 2 routes forward and 1 back.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, what we did, there were 2 divisional We put one company in support of one division, another company in support of five divisions, and the other company sort of for common to all tasks, and the other mechanical equipment grew apart, common to all tasks, building common to all tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but generally speaking, we give a route
to
develop and maintain.
So what I was leading at, though, was say a brigadier, one of the forward brigades, would he contact you if he had a task to do? We have to go through division and the corps.
Yeah, normally the CRE in one of the forward divisions might get in touch with the chief engineer corps or me direct and say, look, we need your help here. If he was speaking to the chief engineer corps, he'd say, can you get us some help up here? But oftentimes we were pretty much in touch with one another all the time. The three CRE and the chief engineer, we met pretty well every day and more or less decided mutually among ourselves
what needed doing. Yeah.
Happy relationship, yeah. Very.
So there were no problems in terms of not having enough men or?
Well, there was always a shortage, yeah. We always, you know, we always could do with more.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, we had what was needed to do the job.
So the system worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Worked very well. And we had a very, very happy relationship with one another. There was no, in Italy, there was just no mistrust or backbiting or buying for position or whatever. And both chief engineers, we had two different chief engineers over there. And we just get along very well, very well.
You consider yourself rather lucky that that happened.
We were very lucky, yeah, yeah. We had a good relationship. Just one happy family, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, the two chief engineers that you had in Italy, had they both been close to your rank before the war and you knew them on that sort of
No,
basis?
One was Brigadier Connolly, who was contemporary of Walsh's.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was a mining engineer who was a good deal older than, but he'd been in the militia before, and he was actually he'd been a member of parliament for the Ontario government.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of a political type, but we got along very well. And he,
what was his name?
Yeah, this was Colin Campbell.
Colin Campbell.
And he was really didn't know nearly as much as we knew about military engineering, but he had a happy faculty of finding out what the Corps plan was and what the Army plan was and keeping us well informed as early as we could possibly wish,
mm-hmm.
and which was a great asset. But having that information is what the Army commander had, the Corps commander had in mind to do a few days ahead and enable us to do our job so much better. And he was excellent at that, just excellent. He was a good, smooth administrator and politician.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't one of the ones that swung his rank at all. He'd have a little old low group, and often he'd sit there and say, well, boys, what are we going to do? And Jack Christian would say, well, I should do this, and I should do this. We'd more or less just talk it over amongst ourselves what to do, and he'd say, okay, let's do it. And that was it. It was great.
Well, how many people would there be in the O group?
Well, it'd just be the three of us, the three CRE and the chief engineer, yeah.
That'd be it.
Mind you, he had a staff who had functions of seeing that we needed more bridging and that sort of thing. They were able to do something about it and hopefully get us intelligence about what the situation was ahead. The chief engineer wasn't alone in his function.
Mm-hmm.
But they were both good chief engineers, both excellent, as far as I was concerned.
Mm-hmm. You worked well with them. Yeah, and the difference in rank didn't really hold anything back. You could.
The first one was a little more formal than the second. He had been PF all along and a little more inclined perhaps to
maintain
work on the basis of rank. But he knew his job and he was a good chief engineer.
And one can be open to suggestions without still maintain that degree of formality without being closed-minded, right?
Yeah, he was, I liked him very well, got along fine with both of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Did you stay in Italy after Fifth Div left and went to France?
I came back in to Europe, the north, to Belgium, and then Holland, in...
Early 45?
Early 45, yeah. I'm just trying to think what months. Well, whenever Operation Goldflake took place, fairly early in 45.
Mm-hmm. So it was well before the Valkyrie campaign started.
Before the which?
The Valkyrie.
Not sure about that. I know my first operational task in Holland was just opposite Arnhem, in a little village called Elst. We set up our headquarters there,
mm-hmm.
and we had to arrange for the bridging across the Rhine at that point.
Can I ask you how you got from Italy to...
Well, I flew.
Okay, and were you
ordered? The troops went... Naples, and then over to Marseille, I think. Naples to Marseille, I think, and then they drove up.
Now, did all the engineering troops in Italy leave? Or what was it? Well, first it was still in Italy, wasn't it?
We all more or less peeled off about the same time. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
I know, I flew and then joined my formation over there in Belgium.
Mm-hmm. So the entire unit, with you commanding it, went from Italy up to Belgium. It wasn't as if you were detached and sent...
No, I went by myself.
But you were still in command of the unit?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Why did I go by myself? I guess I would do some leave.
Did you get much chance for leave in France? Or would it be in France that you had leave?
I think I had it in London.
Really?
Yeah. I had at least sometime there. Can't remember how long. My wife was there, I remember. I should ask her.
I guess it had been some time since you had seen her.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we parted company in 19... Well, exactly on Pearl Harbor, 7th of December, 1941. Yeah.
So you're looking at a full 3 years at least?
Yeah.
Over 3 years?
Yeah. Yeah. 22. Four in a bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, we weren't sure we recognized one another.
So what were you doing in Belgium and Holland?
Just sort of getting reorganized and ready to go up into Holland.
Now, we had a Canadian army at this time, so you were in support for...
We came under command of the Canadian army at that time, yeah.
Okay, so it's no longer under Corps.
Oh, yeah, still under Corps, but the Corps came under Canadian army.
And you said your first task was across the Rhine.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
Just opposite Arnhem.
I saw.
At that stage, before the actual crossing took place, I went back to England to head up the reinforcement training unit there.
Mm-hmm. And where was that at?
At Cove, near...
Cove Barracks.
Sort of Aldershot area, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Called Cove. It was where all the engineers were trained and reinforcements came from.
Was there an existing unit there that you took over, or you had to fill that?
No, it was existing. I took over the training wing of the unit.
Mm-hmm. At this time, was there, because of the engineers coming from Italy, was there an abundance of engineers? Or
no, it was just the regular complement. You see, the whole corps came over, eh?
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have a change in...
No. Malcolm Sutherland Brown, who is now the Colonel Commandant, he took my place at the CRE at that stage.
Had he been serving under you?
No.
So where did you spend the Ida?
I think it's cold.
Was it a memorable VE Day?
Yeah, it was memorable, right? But, you know, we were sort of away from the, where all the action was. Yeah, I was just down there. Yeah.
Well, was it quiet, or was a lot of celebrating, or lots of guns in the air firing?
Not cold, no. No, it was just the woods. certainly living in London, that was an exciting time.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you feel? A lot of soldiers don't take very much to civilians going all gaga at the news of the end of the war. A lot of...
I don't think I felt critical at all.
You just glad, eh?
a great happiness, no doubt about it.
What time is it?
Oh, that time.
Okay. That's a good time to shut it off then.
Yeah.
Would you mind if I came back and we could...
By all means, sure.
Okay, thank you.